After my divorce, I had nothing. Wanting to start over, I had moved out to a crappy apartment in a new city, had no real job, no pets, no kids, and obviously no wife. No real connections to the rest of the world. I was just existing. I was constantly applying to any job I could find and had landed a crappy job in a crappy cafe, serving crappy coffee to crappy people. I was bored and miserable, and despite only recently relocating to another city, I needed a more drastic change. And now, the jackpot has hit. Amidst all those random applications I had submitted was one for a fire lookout in the middle of the woods. No prior experience needed. That's right, a fire lookout. Those people who live isolated in a 70-foot tower in the middle of the woods, looking out for fires and narking on campers. Perfect for me. Despite all the weird applications I submitted, I remember filling this one out because I had found it odd, as it stated the role was currently filled, but that they were accepting applicants, in case it suddenly becomes available, it said. I remember thinking, weird, okay, but I'll go for it anyways. And now, guess what? I've got the job. I got a phone call from a gruff-sounding guy who told me the pay and that I'd be living in the tower until the end of summer, so around 2 months. He also told me that it was imperative that I start right away, providing me with directions and informing me that I would be starting tomorrow if I accept, which I did. So anyways, here's to a fresh start, guys. I can't wait to see where this adventure takes me. I've just parked my car on the furthest point it can possibly go, and now I'm going to have to hike to the tower. It's just past 8 o'clock in the morning, and Mark, the guy who gave me the call, said the hike would take about 4 hours. So I'm setting off now, expecting to make it there by lunch. Mark assured me that there would be a full stock of food at my tower, my new house, basically, and that I'd be able to radio to the nearest tower where I'd receive the lowdown of how everything works. It's a little cold for a summer morning, but I'm very excited for the hike, as the woods in these parts are known for their beauty and quiet atmosphere, which is something I've been longing for. Well, I just arrived at the tower, and now it's just past 1 p.m. The hike was challenging, but easy to navigate as it was well signposted and had a clear trail. The tower is much bigger than I thought it'd be. I'd estimate it's around 100 feet tall with just a hut on top of the four stilts, a winding staircase around the outside leading up to it. Next to the tower is an outhouse and storage unit, which I'm guessing is where the food is stored. I'll explore it later once I get into my hut and set my rucksack down. The stairs were a hell of a climb, but tired, I'll get used to it. The hut is small, has a balcony all around the outside, and inside there's a bed, a big radio, a table with a map, some books, a toolbox, a smaller portable radio, a lamp, binoculars, and a flashlight. The sides of the hut were windows, so from the inside I could see outstretched woods all around me. Creepy, but makes sense as I'm literally keeping an eye out just for fires. I set my rucksack down and remembered what Mark had said about radioing the nearest tower for direction, so I did. Hello? Is anybody there? Is anybody out there? I asked as I fumbled with the big radio. Hey, you're the new guy, aren't you? I'm Allison, a chirpy-sounding woman replied through the static. I've been covering your part of the woods while you were making the journey here, but can't really see too far into it, so I'm glad you're here, she said. Nice to meet you. Yeah, I'm the new guy, Oscar, I radioed back. Mark said you could give me the lowdown. I can. Well, you've already figured out how to work out the radio, so there's a good start. The toilets are at the bottom of the tower, and so is the food stock, which gets topped up every week by Mark or his son. As for the actual job, it's a lot of looking around, making sure nobody is camping at night when they shouldn't be, and making sure no fires are started, Allison went on. Also, you need to make sure that the paths are all clear, but it's all in the handbook, which should be on your desk. Go ahead and give that a read, she said. Thanks, Allison. I'll give that a shot and get back to you, I enthusiastically replied. I'll be sure to radio you if I have any questions. Thanks so much, I said. No response. Cool. She seems pleasant enough. I reached for the handbook and was flicking through it. It basically said everything that she had just said, but in more mumbo-jumbo technical terms, and I'll study it back to front to make sure I do a good job for these folks. But as I flicked through, a piece of paper fell out of the handbook. It was a lined paper, which had been handwritten in blue ink. The handwriting was pretty messy, almost frantic, but it read as follows. These are the rules to avoid the smiling lady. Rule number one, if you see a woman in the woods with a manic smile on her face, don't approach her or draw attention to yourself. Just return back to the tower. Rule number two, if your radio goes off and it's anyone except your closest tower, don't answer it, no matter what you hear. Rule number three, if you hear a woman crying between the hours of 1 a.m. and 4 a.m., you need to ignore it. Rule number four, at night, always sleep with your lamp on. If it starts to flicker, quickly run to turn your main light on until morning. If your lamp flickers off completely before you can do this, you need to hide under your bed until morning. Rule number five, at night, if you hear someone running up the stairs to your tower, also turn on the main light until morning. If you don't do this by the time she's at the top, it's too late. Rule number six, if you wake up and see the smiling woman staring at you through your window, hide under your covers and hold your breath. She will come into your hut and you will feel her breathing right above you as if she is hovering over you. Do not breathe. This will last only a few seconds. Once you feel her leave, turn on the main light until morning. Rule number seven, if you hear any scratching at any point, either on your hut or by the outhouse, turn off all radios and hide under your covers until the scratching stops. Rule number eight, if you are investigating a campfire at night and upon your arrival you hear a woman scream, run back to the tower as fast as you can. Rule number nine, if at any point you are returning to your tower and you notice someone else inside it, run. Do not stop running until you reach the next tower. Don't look back because she will be chasing you. What the hell? Is this some sick, creepy joke? I reached for the radio to ask Allison about the weird rules I just found. But I don't want to be that new guy who just fell for the prank and gets made fun of for being creeped out, so I think I'm just going to leave this alone. Instead, I'll explore the area a bit and finally eat some food. I need to get settled in. Hours went by and I heard, "Good night, dude," Allison radioed in just as I was drifting off to my first night's sleep. I jolted out of sleep with a fright and hastily radioed back. "Night, Allison, and thanks for the help today," I said. My first day was done. After eating, I had explored the woods and become acquainted with the machete used for clearing paths, which was a great stress relief. I had also read up on some of the laws of the woods and further responsibilities of the job. Allison had popped up occasionally just to check in, but I never brought up the weird rules I found. But now I was wide awake, probably from the fright I had gotten from the radio she just gave me wishing me goodnight. I stood up out of the bed and looked around me, seeing nothing but forest. It was dark and creepy, but the darkness was a good thing, no fires. I knew that at night there were other watchers. Less were needed as fire is much easier to spot at night, but it was still important that I knew what to do if it was me who spotted one. I was just about to hop back into bed when I heard a scratching noise, though. That's strange. It's probably an animal down by the storage box, scratching, trying to get in. Jumping into bed, tired after the first day, I reached down to turn my lamp off. And just as I did this, the scratching noise got faster, almost as if whatever it is making it get excited. I move my hand away from the lamp switch and the scratching slows. That's weird. What else is weird is that the scratching seems almost methodical. It has a rhythm to it. Suddenly, both my radios started to emit a high-pitched noise. What the fuck? What's going on here? Shitting myself, I hopped out of bed and turned off the portable radio. And just as I was fiddling with the big radio, I caught another glimpse of the list of rules I had seen earlier. There was something about scratching, wasn't there? Nah, I'm not the most superstitious type, but I ain't taking any chances. So I quickly grabbed the list. Rule number seven. If you hear any scratching at any point, either on your hut or by the outhouse, turn off all radios and hide under your covers until the scratching stops. Oh man, I didn't do that. I needed to turn off the big radio and jump under my covers. What's going on, man? I could still hear the scratching, but it sounded closer. It sounded like it had gone from a distant noise to being right on the wooden door of my hut now. It was weak now, as if whatever was making it was lightly dragging their fingernails across the door frame. I'm not moving an inch. What is that? It's the next morning now. I just woken up. Eventually, I fell asleep last night under the covers, and the scratching had stopped, but I didn't move from my covers at all, eventually letting tiredness take over. Looking back, I feel kind of stupid. I'm in the woods, and there's a ton of animals and radios that can pick up on all types of feedback. I guess it makes sense that the first night was going to be the hardest, trying to adjust to living 100 feet up, alone, in the middle of the forest, no less. Well, I'm going to make the most of my day today. I'm sure the rest of the nights will be much less eventful. I can't stop thinking about that scratching noise last night, though. What was it? It has to be an animal, right? I mean, I hope it's an animal. I'm also trying to not think about that list, but man, it's hard not to. I brought it with me today, just in case. Although I feel sort of silly doing so. I bet it's a prank. It's only my second day, and I'm already being pranked. My mind is racing about this place. Anyways, I'm currently on a patrol, just walking some of the routes and pathways, making sure nobody's camping in any of the openings. It's getting a little dark, so I should probably head back. I'm just about to take a turn that will circle me back to my tower when I catch a glimpse of a campsite. Ah, here we go, my first real task. Telling campers that they need to pack it up and leave. This area is for hiking only. I head on over to take a look at what's going on and notice that the campsite has been set up in a large clearing in the trees. There's just a single reddish-yellow tent and a dried-out fire pit. Hello there, I call out. You can't be camping here, it's for hiking only, I say. Silence, no reply. I walk closer to the campsite, veering towards the fire pit in case something jumps out of the tent at me. I'm such a wimp. I call out again. Hello there. Is anyone around? Can anyone hear me? I say. Nothing. That's when I start to feel weird. Something didn't feel right. I can't explain it. It was just a little off. I'm sure whoever has set this up is just hiking and we'll be right back. But it's already almost dark, which made me worry. Wait. Isn't there a rule about this, I think? I took the list out of my pocket and scanned it again. Sure enough, rule number 8. If you are investigating a campfire at night, and upon your arrival you hear a woman scream, run back to the tower as fast as you can. Okay. Well, not okay, but okay. I've not heard a scream, though. It's just an empty campsite. There isn't even a live fire. I should probably radio Allison. Allison, hey, there's a campsite here. No fire, but no people either. What should I do? I said. Whereabouts is this? Allison replied instantly. I gave her my coordinates after referring to my map, which I had to use my flashlight to view because it was getting pretty dark. I got it. It's just on the edge of my zone. I'll head down there now. You just go back to your tower, okay? Allison responded. Right. Okay, are you sure, though? I asked. Positive. Head back. Be safe, she said. Okay, she's the pro. I guess I'll just let her get to it. I'll radio her asking how it's going when I get back. I was about walking for 30 minutes, almost back at my tower, when I spotted a clear pathway that jutted off into the trees. Weird. I don't remember seeing that on the map. I thought the road I was on had no paths leading off of it. Figuring I had missed it in the morning and that I'd check it out tomorrow, I trudged back to my tower. Once I got back, I sat at my desk and just started staring at the rules. I hadn't asked Allison about them and don't want to unless something else weird happens. Tonight wasn't even really that weird, I just found an empty campsite. No woman scream like the rules warned. I've been sitting here reading the rules now for about 20 minutes and my main radio just goes off. Hey Oscar, I've dealt with a camper. He says he was taking a shit by some trees and wasn't aware he wasn't allowed to be camping here, Allison explains. He must have been doing this business when you were by the site. I'm walking him to his car now, so it's all good, she said. Oh, okay. Well, thanks for dealing with that. Good night, Allison, I respond, feeling bad she trekked all the way out there for a guy taking a shit. I went ahead and headed to bed. It's the next afternoon now. Last night was fine for me. No issues. I'm feeling a little more safe and secure now and have the list on my table today. I spent the morning eating. A lot. I think my appetite is growing due to all the walking around. I've been staring a lot out at the woods from my tower, which is really calming. It's time for my late afternoon rounds to make sure nobody is camping, but first I want to check out that weird trail that isn't on any of the maps. I get to it quite quickly. It's relatively close, and sure enough, it's as clear as a trail as any. It's as if it had been maintained, just as well like the other main ones. I trudge along it, not expecting much. It's a bit downhill, but not a hard walk. I've been walking on it for about 5 minutes now, and I think I can see the end of the trail. And that's all I see, though. Just an end. Well, that's kind of crappy. This leads to literally nothing, just a wall of trees. And I'm just about to turn back when I finally see it. There's a small red handkerchief around the branch of a nearby tree. Interesting. I walk up to it, and just as I approach it, I see another one, slightly deeper into the woods. And behind that, another one. What's going on here? And what kind of an idiot do I have to be to walk right into a serial killer trap by following these? Almost as if I want to prove myself that I'm not a wimp. So I'm going to follow them. I have gone past 5 red handkerchiefs now, each plain red with no inscriptions or anything, and I'm about to reach another one. The difference is that this one is on the ground. The rest were all on branches. But past this one, I can't see any more. That's a bit annoying, sighing as I reach down to pick up the last handkerchief to inspect it. I see that this one is tied around something. Something wooden, kind of heavy. I heave it up into the air and dirt rises off a wooden door as it reveals a small bunker. Whoa, this is cool. It's literally about 10 feet deep and 10 feet wide, and it has a ladder on its wall where the door was lifted. I shine my flashlight in and can see a sleeping bag on the floor below and a camera. That's it, though. I climbed down the ladder. It was sturdy. Felt like it had been crafted well. In fact, the whole bunker seemed pretty clean for being an underground bunker. But there's literally just a sleeping bag in here. And a camera with the charger plugged into the camera itself, but obviously not to any wall sockets as it's a bunker. I pick the camera up and try to turn it on. It's dead. It's a relatively modern camera, has a screen to view pictures on one side, which seems fine other than a slight crack. The main lens of the camera, though, has been smashed. Looks like its days of taking pictures are finally over. I'm going to charge this up when I get back to my tower. I'm excited to see what's on it. And I'll radio Allison about it too when I get back, otherwise she'll know I'm starting my actual rounds too late. Hours go by and I'm walking back down the path and you will never guess what happened. The campsite from last night, it's back. Hell, it looks like it never even left. It's exactly where I saw it last night. Has this guy come back thinking he could sneak back to the exact same spot? I'm literally looking at the same reddish-yellow tent in the same position. The only difference is that the campfire is lit this time around, which was the only other light provided other than for my flashlight. Annoyed, I figured I'll deal with this guy and then radio Allison the good news, that I've dealt with it myself. I march up to the tent and reach to pull the back cover. I don't care if I give him a fright tonight. He shouldn't be here and he should know damn well that I'm the fire lookout of these woods. I rip the cover right off. Wait, what? There's nothing in the tent. I mean nothing. No person, no sleeping bag, no rucksack. Just dirt. The fire is burning strong behind me as I swivel around toward it, scanning the trees beyond its fiery glow. It feels like something is staring at me. I quickly kick the fire and pour what's left of my water on it to put it out. I'm literally plunging myself into complete darkness right now. The fire is now out and I'm keeping my flashlight pointed at the ground because I can't bear to look at the trees beyond the campfire. Still feeling uneasy, I grab for my radio to call Allison, and then I hear a blood-curdling scream pierce through the silence, coming from the growth of trees just beyond the campfire. Holy shit. That scream is one that I could have never have imagined. It's a scream of pure pain, pure rage. A dark figure then bursts from the trees, screaming all the while, and starts to run after me. I only make out part of its silhouette before turning to run myself, but I noted the shape of a human, a woman, with long hair and arms flailing loosely by her side as she sprinted at me. Now I'm running through the woods that I've just come to learn, staying on the path that I know leads back to my tower. And she hasn't stopped screaming, still chasing me. The long, drawn-out scream is all I can hear, piercing my thoughts. Making a sharp turn on the path, I start to scream myself, although I can't even hear my own words over hers. I'm over halfway back to the tower now. Should I look back? Oh my God, I can't. It'll slow me down. And that scream is getting louder. She's gaining on me. How is she still screaming and running at the same time? Oh, there's my tower. I see the dim glow from the lamp as I had left it on in the hut above, breaching the darkness ahead of me, providing me with some hope. I reach the stairs, bolting up at them at full speed. The windy staircase is sort of uneven, so I'm stumbling every few steps, but I've yet to lose my balance. Halfway up, I hear her bolt onto the first few steps. She's fast, and I can hear her coming. She's gaining on me pretty well, but I think I can make it. I'm at the top now, and I run into my hut, and as I slam the door, the screams suddenly stop. I'm wedged up against the door, adrenaline pumping now, holding my flashlight like a weapon, ready to fight. And the sudden silence doesn't help. At least when she was screaming, I knew where she was located. My ears are still ringing, though, and I stayed heaved against my door. I wasn't going to move an inch. It's been an hour now since the screaming stopped, and I haven't heard a sound since. My adrenaline has died down, but honestly, guys, I'm still fucking terrified. I'm finally going to try to move away from the door and radio Allison. Hopefully I'll be able to speak, because up until this point I've been terrified from the fear. If this is a prank, this is really messed up. Although for my sake, I hope it's a prank. I flick the main radio on. Allison, I anxiously gasp. Allison, please answer, I say. After what feels like hours of silence, but was probably only a minute or so, I hear a croaky moan. Uh-huh. That's not Allison, is it? Uh-huh. It was a woman's voice, and it sounded in pain. What if that freaky thing that chased me got to Allison? Just as I was about to respond to check up on her, the radio sounded again. What started as another moan got louder, turning into a scream. It was the same scream. Oh my God. The same scream that will haunt my dreams, tainting them in pain and anger. She was screaming through my radio, and I slammed it off. The next morning, Allison chirped at me through the radio. Good morning, man. How'd you sleep? Allison, I replied, warily from my lack of sleep over the previous night. What is this list of rules I found? I said. What list? Allison radioed back. At that point, I explained everything that had happened, from finding the list, to the scratching, to being chased by a crazy demon bitch last night, and everything else I told her that made me uncomfortable. Allison sighed deeply, as if to say, here we go again. This has happened before, she said. In fact, it happens to every person who gets assigned to your tower, she stated. I don't know what to believe anymore. At first, I thought it was just people going crazy from the isolation in the woods. I mean, I've never seen anything, personally. But after Harvey and you, only after, what, 4 days now? I don't know what to believe, she said. Harvey, I replied. Who's Harvey? Well, the guy before you. He lived in your tower for over a year. He refused to ever go home or take a holiday, Allison said. He was a tough guy, good with his hands. He always had a project going on. And sometimes, towards the end, I wouldn't hear from him for days. I think he spent entire nights out of his tower. No idea where he went, though, she said. Towards the end, I asked. I wasn't going to let that comment slide on by. Yeah, he disappeared, she said. Mark thinks he ran off. His tower was apparently just empty when he checked up on him. No bags, no belongings, no Harvey. But I don't know. Why would he just quit after a year of refusing to leave the woods at all? Allison said. In the months leading up to his disappearance, he became obsessed with a smiling lady. He claimed he would see her at night, but he never went into detail. If I questioned him, he would just stop replying. Like I said, he didn't talk to me much, she said. Okay, I thought to myself. But him leaving didn't explain why the job advertisement stated that the job may suddenly become available, so I then questioned Allison on that. Well, I don't know anything about that, she said. I've been working here for 2 years, and Mark still never tells me anything. And who worked here before Harvey, I pondered. Another guy, Rick, Allison said. He left a few days after I started, but he asked me once if I had seen a woman in the woods, a woman that smiles. I said no. I didn't think anything of it. I just thought he was a weirdo, she said. I did not feel content with the amount of information I was receiving, unsure if she genuinely doesn't know much or if she's hiding something. So I decided to ask about her. Okay, well, what made you take this job? I said. Well, I don't know. I guess we're opening up to each other this morning, aren't we here? Allison nervously chuckled. I didn't reply, waiting for her to answer my question. My sister went missing in these woods, Allison said, voice now trembling. It was right before I started. I took the job to, I don't know, maybe try to find her, or at least try to help others who might get lost. I don't know, she said. Well, I'm really sorry about your sister, Allison. Now I felt bad for asking. That's really courageous of you, though, I said. I'm not going to ask her any more questions. Not yet. I'm not sure how much she's actually telling me. But right now, at this moment, it does feel like she's my ally, and I want to keep it that way. I thanked her for talking to me. I trust her, I think. I feel a bit more at ease, although I'm not sure why. Harvey apparently just disappeared, and both he and Rick claimed to have seen the same smiling lady. Was that lady the same one that chased me last night? I'm not sure what to make of this. The camera I had found was now charged up. It's evening, and I still haven't slept. I've not really moved at all. I've just been trying to make sense of all the information that I've gotten through the day. Allison gave me a little more details, but not much. Maybe the camera will provide some answers. It flickers on, and on the screen it shows 3 choices. Photo, gallery, settings. I went ahead and chose the gallery. The first few photos weren't exciting at all. There's a few pictures of a random lake, a random house, a random car. Nothing that helps me. Flicking them through at such a fast pace, I almost didn't realize that I skimmed over a picture of the tower, my tower, and at the base of the tower was a family of 3. The father has dark hair, quite tall, and looks as if he's experienced with the outdoors, a big sturdy guy. The mother was a blonde woman with a beautiful smile, her arm on her husband's shoulder. The third member is a child, a boy with short brown hair and a striking resemblance to who I guessed to be his dad. I continue to look through the photos, but no longer see the family together. Only the man. He was then taking selfies inside my tower, taking photos of the view from my window of the outhouse and some of the trails. Is this Harvey or is this Rick? If it were Harvey, why would he not want to leave the woods to see his family? But then the photos got stranger. The next photo is of a bunker. The bunker. The one that I found nearby. Built into the ground, holding only a sleeping bag and this camera. It looks unfinished. A work in progress. With each picture, it looked a little more complete, though. Whoever had this camera was building it. Allison said Harvey was good with his hands. Didn't she? Why would he build a bunker in the woods? And so close to the tower? The next photo was of a random tree in the darkness. In fact, the next four or five photos are of the same tree. At the base of the tree is a shadow, a weird distorted shadow, a shadow that doesn't make any sense. Was Harvey or whoever this guy is trying to take a photo of something? Was he trying to take a photo of the smiling lady? My mind trailed off. What was that noise? What time is it? Oh my God, it's 2:13 a.m. I must have fell asleep. And something just woke me up. I can't hear anything now, but something definitely just woke me up. I was so exhausted from the night before that I wouldn't have just woken up on my own accord. Maybe it's it sounds like faint crying. A woman's cry. It doesn't sound too close, though, but I sat up in bed as I listened to the long, mournful wails. I know this rule. I remember it. Rule number 3. If you ever hear a woman crying between the hours of 1 a.m. and 4 a.m., you need to ignore it. Except, I can't ignore it. It sounds so sad, so broken. Part of me wants to go and help her. The other part of me wants to investigate and get more answers. No part of me wants to ignore this. Quietly as I can, I slide on my gear, grab my flashlight and radio, and open the door to my hut. I carefully went down the stairs, shining the light at my feet to ensure that I don't trip. The crying is coming from an area of the woods off the path, so I carefully tread towards the dark cluster of trees. The cries are of such pain, such sadness. I can only compare them to that of a mother who has lost her child, wailing in complete despair, losing a part of her soul with every agonizing sob. My flashlight is off now, as the crying is getting louder. I'm crouched down, moving from bush to bush and tree to tree. The air is foggy and cold, and it's getting colder the closer I get. As I crouch behind a tree, I see her. She's sitting down by a tree, her face covered, crying into her hands. She has long, dark hair which sprawls down her back and rests in the dirt. Although I can't see it too clearly, I think she's wearing a gown, which seems clean and undamaged. What is damaged, though, are her arms. Her arms are twisted and broken. One of her elbows is bent backwards, with bone jutting out under the skin from both of her forearms, although not piercing through. Her fingernails are long and sharp. Not an ounce of meat on her. Her body is almost skeletal. Her pale white skin is glowing in the darkness, hugging her collarbone, accentuating her bony figure. My radio statics, only for a second, and I quickly look down to turn it off. And as I do, I realize the crying has stopped. I'm still looking down at my radio. Oh fuck, I think she heard me. I can't look up now, I'm gonna feel sick. I force myself and slowly look up at her. She's looking at me now. She has hollow, dark, and wide eyes, and they look lifeless. The whites of her eyes providing a drastic contrast to her dark pupils. Her eyebrows are raised, and she's smiling. Her smile is unnaturally wide, spreading across her face wider than what should have been possible, baring all her teeth. Her smile is so menacing, so dark. On her face remains remnants of the tears she had cried, some tears still dripping off her sharp cheekbones and dripping down her narrow neck. Except she wasn't crying now. Now she looks excited. I'm thinking about running, but I can't look away from her. I'm trying to convince myself to just get up and run. I need to run. I've been staring at her for about a minute and a half, and she hasn't moved, though. Her eyes still locked with mine. Her smile so sinister. Just as I'm about to muster the courage to turn my back on her and run, she moves. In one quick motion, her neck snaps to the side with a click, and she crawls into the darkness beyond her. The movement was so fast, her broken arms cracking as she shot away. This is my chance. I get up, and I start to run. I run hard, and I don't look back. I'm dodging some trees now, running into others and not stopping. Why did she just leave me alone like that? Okay, there's the tower. I run up the stairs, stumbling into my hut, and slam the door. I hear nothing. From the safety of my hut, I'm looking around the base of the tower, at the woods around me, and I see nothing. I decide to get under my covers now and I turn my lamp on and jump into bed. Shaking, I try to calm myself so that I can listen to my surroundings, listening out for her over my pounding heartbeat. But I hear nothing. There's nothing but silence. Just as I peep out from my covers, building up the courage to radio Allison, I see it. Scratch marks are on the floor of my hut. Marks that weren't there before. Marks that I must have missed when I raced in. They look like something made by an animal, made by something crawling. The marks are from the door of my hut, all the way across the room to my bed. I couldn't see her outside before because she was already inside the hut with me. Oh my God, she's under my bed. I am completely frozen. I know she's there. I can feel her. She's underneath my bed. What do I do? I think back to the rules. Was there anything about this? There are two rules that could help, but I don't know which one to follow. Rule number 6. If you wake up and see the smiling woman staring at you through your window, hide under your covers and hold your breath. She will come into your hut and you will feel her breathing right above you as if she is hovering over you. Do not breathe. This will last only a few seconds. Once you feel her leave, turn on the main light until morning. Or, rule number 9. If at any point you are returning to your tower and you notice someone else inside it, do not stop running until you reach the next tower. Don't look back, because she will be chasing you. Okay, alright. Do I hide under my covers until she leaves, like rule 6? Or do I need to get out of here because now she's inside my tower, like in rule 9? She was already inside it though when I entered, so that's rule 9, right? Oh my God. I hear her. Not loud, but I hear her. The kind of sound made when someone is trying to move slowly while trying not to break the silence. The slightest shuffle. A second later, a slight cracking noise. Her arms, they're moving. And with it, a low, stifled groan. I close my eyes. I need to make up my mind. Should I stay under my covers or should I get out of here? Rule 6 or rule number 9? I feel the slightest tug at the bottom of my covers now. It wasn't a hard tug and only lasted a second. Following this came a second tug, slightly harder than the last. I'm going to go with rule number 9 now. With an explosion of speed, I leap out of my bed and burst through the door as it slams behind me. I don't see her, I don't look. Luckily, I'm already in my shoes from earlier. I'm halfway down the tower now and I hear a bang above me. The door slamming as she leaves the hut. I'm at the bottom of my tower now and I hear steps above me running down. She's halfway down the tower now and I'm running towards the path. Then I hear the shuffle of dirt and grass behind me. She's now at the bottom of my tower. I'm running towards the bunker and the noise behind me is getting louder. She's catching up. She's on the path too. I reach the bunker and quickly open it. I swing onto the ladder and shut the panel above me, and I hear her. She's moving around above me, on the wood and the grass around it. Her low moans freeze me, making my hair stand on my neck, and she croaks in anguish. I'm now tucked into the corner of the bunker, and I'm staring up towards the door, but can't see it through the darkness. She's still above me, and I hear her movements. They're a mix of fast, sudden jolts, and slow, almost confused movements. Maybe she didn't see me go in here. Maybe she doesn't even know about it. Or maybe she can't get in. Is this where Harvey would spend his nights when he wasn't at the tower? Allison said she didn't know where he would spend some of his nights. Was it here? Now I can't hear anything and it's been about 20 minutes. I think she could be gone. But I don't want to be an idiot either. I'm staying in this bunker until morning. Eventually, I dripped off to the calm sound of the wind caressing the nearby trees and closed my eyes. Alright, so last night was way too close. Looking back on my decision to investigate, I feel really stupid. But I won't be making decisions like that again. I'm going to be a stickler to the rules now. It's morning and I'm still in the bunker. I eventually build up the courage to lift the panel above me and peep out, blinded by the sunlight after being enshrouded in darkness for so long. All looks clear. Wary, I climb out and head to my tower. I'm quickly climbing the stairs to my tower when I hear a voice behind me. Hello, the voice said. I shit myself, spinning around and almost falling off the side of the staircase. There's a girl at the base of my tower, a normal-looking girl. She has brown hair, glasses, and is carrying a large rucksack. She's wearing hiking gear and smiling at me. Sorry to scare you, she says. Hi, I'm Samantha. Well, Sam for short. I'm still just staring at her, my heart pounding. Mark's daughter, she says. Here to top up your food? Allison had mentioned that Mark or his son would be here for that. She never mentioned he had a daughter. Oh, okay. Hey, I reply, voice shaking. Sorry, you've scared me a little bit. I'm, my name's Oscar, I said. Hey, I'm Sam, she reiterates, still smiling. Are you okay? She said. I forced a weak smile and nod. You just gave me a little scare, that's all. I thought it was Mark or his son that tops this up, I asked. She laughs. It usually is. I've kind of just recently started helping out, I guess. You're actually my first stop today. It's nice to meet you, Oscar, she said. She did what she did and left. Hours have passed by again, and it's getting dark now. I'm feeling determined to find out what's happening in these woods. Don't get me wrong, I'm scared shitless, but I'm done making bad choices. As far as I know, I can be on my own. I don't know who to trust. Allison, maybe? I'll need to see. Just before heading to bed, I radio her to ask her something. Hey, Allison, I say. Does Mark have a daughter? Oscar, hey, Allison replies a minute later. I was about to radio you goodnight. I'm not too sure about that. I've only met his son. Why? She said. Oh, okay. Well, I was just wondering, I said. Are you okay, Oscar? Does something else happen? She asks. I'm fine, Allison. Good night, I said and turned off the radio. I'm still terrified, but I know what I need to do. These rules are my lifeline. They will keep me alive, so I just need to follow them. I know that now more than ever, and I'm keeping my shoes on when I sleep tonight just in case. I decide to turn on the lamp before switching off the main light. I'd been lying in bed for about 30 minutes when I heard it, scratching again. And I reminded myself of rule number 7. If you hear any scratching at any point, either on your hut or by the outhouse, turn off all radios and hide under your covers until the scratching stops. The scratching is faint tonight. It sounds like it's coming from somewhere on the staircase, if not down below by the outhouse. Immediately, I rush to my big radio and switch it off. I check to make sure my small radio is still off from earlier, which it is. I swiftly move back to my bed and get under the covers. The scratching continues, and now it gets louder. Each one is slow and long, mimicking the sound of nails against a wooden board. Each scratch is followed by around 10 seconds of silence, then by another one that sounds closer than the last. Soon the scratching feels as if it's right by me, almost as if it's on the frame of my bed. I hold my breath and close my eyes. It's not a rule to close your eyes. I am just completely terrified now. The next scratch is longer than all the ones I've heard. It's either on my bed frame or the door of my hut. I don't know, I can't think straight, but I'm not going anywhere. 15 minutes goes by and the scratching stops. All I can hear is the rustling of the trees below as the wind whips through them, creating an atmospheric whooshing sound right past my hut. I had already made the decision to stay under my covers for the remainder of the night, just in case, when I heard another sound. Faint footsteps. Each fast thud increased in volume as I realized she was sprinting up the staircase now. In my panic, I completely forgot the rule. Instinctively, I jolted out of bed and ran to my main light switch. I turn it on and the running immediately stops. I am frozen, standing by my light switch, waiting for something to happen, but nothing does. Trembling, I edge towards the list of rules which I kept beside my bed. I pick them up and check that I've done the right thing. Rule number 5. At night, if you hear someone running up the stairs to your tower, also turn on the main light until morning. If you don't do this by the time she's at the top, it's too late. Oh, thank God. I had known that my main light was included in more than one of these rules, and I'm so relieved that I chose correctly. I am looking around the balcony now, surrounding my tower, and I see nothing. I stare at the top of the staircase for what feels like an eternity, but nothing happens. Nobody comes up. The bright glow of the main light makes it impossible to see out into the surrounding woods below. As I sat at my desk, I couldn't see much. It's been about 2 hours since she tried running up my stairs, and there's no way I'm going to be able to sleep tonight. So I use my time wisely. I've been intensely reading the maps of the surrounding areas, learning the routes around my tower like the back of my hand. However, I've also learned something new. I've managed to learn the route to the next closest tower, and it's not too complicated. While I still think I can trust Allison, I want to actually meet her. I want to see her for myself and talk freely, face to face, not hiding behind a radio. I've decided that tomorrow, I'm going to go to her tower. I wake up early. I'm only on a few hours sleep, but it'll do. In fact, I'm too driven to even notice my exhaustion. I pack a light backpack, some food, water, flashlight, radio, my map, and my machete. I also bring the camera to see if Allison can confirm if the man in the photos is actually Harvey. The sunlight is peering out over the overstretched trees. I've never really taken in the beauty of the sunrise, and I'm usually either asleep or scared shitless, but I can tell you that it was beautiful. I decide not to tell Allison that I'm coming. While I do feel a degree of trust, I don't want to warn her of my whereabouts, giving her a chance to change or alter anything just in case. I lace up my shoes and start the trek to her tower. It should only take me about 3 hours to get there. The route was relatively direct, and judging from the map, I wouldn't have had too many steep climbs or anything weird like that. I did notice a stark difference as I ventured out of my zone and into Allison's, though. Each lookout has a zone, and they are to maintain the pass and deal with any issues that may arise within their zone. However, as I made the transition into Allison's zone, I noticed that her paths were not well maintained. To be honest, they weren't well maintained at all. Overgrown trees, bushes, and flora made me thankful I brought my machete as I hacked away and continued along the barely visible paths. It was tiring work, but I wanted to make sure the paths were clear enough to run through, should I suddenly need to do so. I was starting to lose a little motivation and get hungry by the time I reached her tower. It had taken about 5 hours due to the work I had to put into clearing the paths, but I just got here now. The tower is exactly like mine, the same layout with a hut on top of the four stilts, huddled within a small opening in the woods. Her outhouse was on the opposite side, but her food bank was in an identical position to mine, just left of the tower's base. However, there is one massive difference I immediately noticed. What the heck? The remains of a huge fire pit, like that of a bonfire, around 50 feet from her tower. It was surrounded by stones, and it looks like one that someone had gotten good use out of. Considering our job is to make sure that there are no fires at all in these woods, that's kind of strange, right? I make my way up the tower. I'm relatively quiet as I do so, partly because I don't want her thinking I'm the smiling lady running up the stairs, but mostly because I'm also pretty nervous. Upon reaching the top, I can already see the tower has nobody in it. In fact, it looks like it never has anyone in it. The hut has old nests along the top of it, old spider webs along the banisters, and dust literally everywhere. I go to the open door and it's locked. That's weird. My tower doesn't even have a lock on it. I peek through the glass, squinting to see through the thick layer of dust on the inside of the window. It's dark, darker than it should be in there. But I do make out the main radio on a table, next to a stack of what looks like newspapers and files. The bed, messy and unkept. There's a bag peeking out from under the bed, and I'm guessing it's her rucksack. From what I can see, there are no books, no decks of cards, nothing to keep her occupied during the day. How does she stay sane out here? I decide to radio her. I've not trekked all this way not to meet her. And so I pick up my radio and say, "Allison, can I come in?" "Hey," a fast reply. "What's up, Oscar?" she says. "Hey, just wondering," I say as I decide to investigate a bit before letting her know I'm here. "Whereabouts are you?" I say. "I'm in my tower. Why?" she replies. "Okay, that's strange," I think. "I'm certain that this is the right tower. This is her tower. I'm looking into it. Nobody's there. Is she lying to me?" "Ah, it's nothing," I lie, trying to mask my trembling voice behind one of confidence. "Just some campers on the edge of my zone. I'll deal with them," I said. No reply. Did she buy it? Does she believe me? "Come on and reply, Allison. I need to know if you believe me or not." "Cool, nice one, Oscar. Thanks for that," she says. Okay, thank God. She believes me, I think. I decide to head down her tower and hide behind a tree nearby. I wanted to scope this out. Maybe she was heading back to the tower. But she said she was there already. Maybe it's just a misunderstanding. So I'm going to scope the situation out and see what happens next. It's now been over 30 minutes. There's not been any sign of her, not any sign of anything. In fact, this area is completely quiet, completely dead. Where's the rustle of animals? Where's the sound of distant hikers? It's too quiet. During the wait, I had told myself that if she doesn't come back soon, I was going to break into her tower. I have no idea if that's illegal or not, but it's technically the property of my employer, right? So I'm guessing it is illegal. But I need to investigate anyways, and I need to do so soon, before it gets dark out here. I walk back up to her tower door, and I hit it with the butt of my machete, just above the doorknob. The loud bang breaks the eerie silence, followed by the creak of the door as it swings open, freezing me for a second as I wait for something to happen. Nothing. I head inside. Dust hits me, and I hold myself back from coughing. I should probably be quiet, but I need to be fast, too. The inside of the hut is cold, weirdly colder than the temperature outside. I walk over to the stack of newspapers and files. The headline of the first newspaper I see gives me chills. "Sister Hikers Missing," it read. I skim the article. It's these woods. Two sisters missing. Was this Allison's sister? She only told me she had one sister missing. Was she the other one? This doesn't make any sense. I flicked through the rest of the newspapers, most just reiterating that two sisters were still missing. Until one sister found after being missing for 3 weeks, it said. The article stated that one of the sisters had been found alive and well, but the other was still missing. It says that they were separated after getting lost in the woods. Allison had mentioned that she had also gotten lost too, if this was about her at least. Did she consider that too personal, or did she lie? I turned my attention to the files. Inside was one piece of paper, and its headline read, Oscar. What the heck? Under it was information about me, information I had shared with her about my divorce and why I took the job. It had my age on it and what I also looked like. Maybe she kept these notes just in case she wouldn't forget? An odd way of trying to be friendly. Wait, how does she know this? We've never met. How does she know what I look like? Something very fucking weird is going on here. I turn my attention to the bag under the bed. It's a big rucksack, dark blue. I pull it out and open it up. Inside was a bunch of clothes. They look like male clothes, t-shirts, hiking pants, a rain jacket. I dig a little deeper and I find a hammer, and then a wrench. Nothing too out of the ordinary here, I guess. The next item I take out is a pair of sunglasses. Ingrained on the side is the initials, RS. Initials? Definitely not Allison's, but somebody's. I reach my hand into the bottom of the bag and feel a small metallic object. I lift it out and it's a pocket knife. It's actually a really nice knife. It looks like something that someone has personally designed. It has a golden outline and laced through it is a mix of wavy silver and black designs. There's something ingrained on this too. In very small letters it says, To my love, to you, Harvey. Okay, that's strange. Why does she have Harvey's knife? Is this his stuff? Is this where his stuff went after he disappeared? I've decided not to take anything because she'll know I was here. But I'm getting out of here. I don't feel safe at all. As I stand to leave, I hear a familiar voice behind me. It's Allison's voice, and she says, You know, all she wants is to make you smile. I spin around. Behind me, a woman stands between me and the door. She is slightly shorter than me with messy, unwashed blonde hair which expels out at all angles. Her clothes long, light brown hiking pants, ruined by old dirt and stains. Similarly, her light red checkered shirt looks like it's seen better days, wrinkled, dirty, a rip stemming from the end of one of her sleeves. Her face normal or at least human. The bright blue irises of her eyes provided a direct contrast to the red bloodshot surroundings. She looks like she hasn't slept in weeks. Her frenzied eyes screamed insanity, and she looked at me with a crazed look with her hands drooped by her side. Her frail body looks to be one of the malnourished, one of the abandoned. Allison, I stammer. What do you mean she wants to make me smile? I said. She just wants to make you smile, Allison replied, still staring at me with a crazed look in her eyes. Right, right. Okay, Allison, what's going on? I try to act confident. Are you okay? I ask. Allison moves towards the bed. I circle around the hut as she does so. I'm now by the door. A good start. She sits down on the bed and looks down at the dusty floor, and I see a tear run down her face. This is a broken woman. We went missing, Allison gulped. Both of us. And I got saved, but she didn't. I couldn't tell them what I did, but it was bad, and now she's... Her voice trailed off. What did you do, Allison? I say, and I'm ready to reach for my machete at any moment now. We got lost, and we were lost for so long. She kept telling me it's gonna be okay, Allison. They'll find us. But they never did. For so long, and I got hungry. She was also so positive, always smiling. But there was no food. We couldn't catch anything. Nothing worked. Oh, we tried, Oscar. I promise we tried, Allison said, her voice now straining. Okay, all right, Allison, calm down and relax. I know you tried, but what happened, I say. She looked up, and I jumped a little, but she only continued to speak. She was looking at me smiling when I pushed her. I pushed her far, right off the side. It was a moment of weakness, a moment of hunger. She fell so far, her arms, they cracked, and she wasn't moving. I was just so hungry, she said. She looked back to the ground and then said, She died how she lived, always smiling. My stomach churned. You mean to tell me that she just killed her own sister and ate her out here in the woods? I've heard hunger makes you do crazy things, but I've never heard it makes you do something like this, to your own family member no less. After I pushed her, I couldn't do it. She looked up at me once more, tears welling in her otherwise frantic eyes. And the next day they found me, she said. My stomach dropped. They found her only a day after that. I was scared of her, but I felt a sense of sympathy for Allison now. I couldn't live with that. A moment of madness defining my life forever, and for what? For literally nothing? And then she found me, Allison whispered as she looked back to the ground, another tear rolling down her cheek. Who found you? I asked, hoping it wasn't who I think she'll say, my blood now frozen. My sister, she said, still smiling and still hungry. She murmured, she's taking revenge on me, and she's taking revenge on you. Allison then stood up and looked back at me. On all of you. I took a step back, backing out of the hut, not taking my eyes off of Allison. Well, wait a minute. What have I done? I didn't do anything. I just started this job, I said. She blames you all. You couldn't find her. It's your job. It's our job to find her. Instead, she found me, and I will never lose her again, Allison said, and started walking slowly towards me. Allison, hold on a second here. I have never even fucking worked here. I've never even been to these woods in my life. I used to work in a shitty cafe that served shitty coffee to shitty people. I don't know anything about this situation, I said. I'm starting to panic now as I take steps back. Allison, we can get you help. We can get you out of here, I said. She gets hungrier every time. She's never satisfied anymore, and there's no getting out, Allison said again. And I knew why the surrounding woods were so quiet now. When Harvey worked here, he tried following the rules too, but she got to him eventually. Rules or no rules, nothing will stop her, she said. Allison, for the first time now, starts to smile, and then she continues. And Oscar, she's so hungry right now, she said. She then lunges at me with a sudden sharp screech, arms outstretched. Her weak frame is easy to overpower, and I roll her to the side, and with a swift movement, push her away from me. She stumbles and her foot slides off the side of the balcony. She loses her balance, hitting the wooden floor with a thud before falling from the side of the tower. It all happened so fast. I fell to the floor as I pushed her, mostly out of shock. I hear her hit something on the way down, probably the steps, followed by a solid thud as she meets the ground below. She didn't once scream as she fell. Holy shit, did I just kill her? Oh my god, I may have killed her. I scramble to my feet and rush down the stairs, hoping she's not dead, hoping that I didn't just commit murder. When I reach the bottom, I see her lying around 10 feet from the tower's base, face down, arms broken, twisted, a small pool of blood oozing from her head and feeding the soil below. She isn't moving. I'm running down the path to my tower now, stopping briefly only when the exhaustion takes over. I should be able to get there before it's dark. Fuck this, I'm getting out of these woods. Allison is completely insane, and she attacked me. It was self-defense. It had to be. She's insane. Something she said is really sticking with me, though, that there were 10 rules. On the sheet that I have, and that I now know was written by Harvey, there were only 9 rules. What is the 10th rule? This at least explains how Harvey survived for so long, a year. The poor man before him, Rick, who I now suspect owned the sunglasses in Allison's hut, only survived a week. But Harvey had 9 rules, 9 ways the smiling lady can get you and how to avoid her. I'm not sticking around to find out what the 10th rule is. I'm getting out of these woods. I'm still running back, but I can feel something watching me. It's almost dark, but I can see my tower. I don't know how I'm going to get to my car, and I don't want to be walking these woods at night, so I've decided I'm going to sleep at the bunker. I figure that's where Harvey spent his nights when he wasn't at the tower. I also figured that could be a key to how he survived for so long. And it's even saved me in the past. I'm going to run up to my tower, grab my main rucksack, and then head to the bunker. I'm on the verge of passing out from dehydration, and I'm in need of more water, which is also up in my tower. I'll grab my things and go. In and out, it'll be quick. I run up to my tower, gather my things, and I turn to leave. But I hear something. It's faint, easy to miss, but it's there. I hold my breath and stop moving, listening for what the sound is. Long, slow, quiet sounds. It's the scratching. And I remember rule number 7 again. If you hear any scratching at any point, either on your hut or by the outhouse, turn off all radios and hide under your covers until it stops. You have got to be kidding me. She knows. She knows I'm trying to leave. I'm frozen in place, hoping the scratching will stop, knowing that if it doesn't, I still have to follow the rules. I turn to my radio. Over it in the woods directly below, I see a pale white face looking up at me, the same stringy dark hair dangling from her head, the same wide, sinister smile plastered across her face, her white skin illuminated by the surrounding darkness. I see none of her body, just her face emerging from the black of night. She's looking up at me, her eyes excited and locked with mine. She knows I'm trying to escape. There's no way around this. I have to spend one last night here, and I feel like she's going to do everything she can to get me. I break our gaze and turn the radios off before jumping under my covers. What Allison said to me is ringing in my mind. She's so hungry now. The scratching stops shortly after I get under my covers. I can literally feel her hunger in the air, looming above my tower, focusing in on me. I peek from my bed once I'm certain that the scratching noises have stopped. I don't want her to catch me off guard. I want to be ready for anything she throws at me tonight. I stand up and circle around the balcony of my hut, scanning the surrounding area. Where she stood before, she no longer does. I knew she was fast. Previously, she had beaten me back to my tower when I found her crying in the woods, and she could be anywhere now. I turn back and walk into my hut. I'm looking out one of my windows now as the reflection of the doll lamp starts to flicker behind me. Oh shit. Rule number 4. At night, always sleep with your lamp on. If it starts to flicker, quickly run to turn on your main light until morning. If your lamp flickers off completely before you can do this, hide under your bed until morning. My eyes adjust as I look at the reflection of the lamp, and there she is, right in front of me, through the glass, standing on my balcony. It's her. Her broken arms distended, her straggly hair wet, her eyes large and her smile wide. And I remember rule number 6. If you wake up and see the smiling woman staring at you through your window, hide under your covers and hold your breath. She will come into your hut and you will feel her breathing right above you as if she is hovering over you. Do not breathe. This will last only a few seconds. Once you feel her leave, turn on the main light until morning. The lamp flickers once more, then shuts off, plunging me into darkness. I have 2 rules that I need to follow, 2 conflicting rules now. I can't look away from her, but I know I have to turn on the main light. Her neck suddenly snaps to the side and she starts to walk fast. I mean really fast, stomping loud with each step as she makes her way around the balcony towards the door on the other side. I turn and sprint to the main light and she's about halfway to the door when I turn it on. And now I have to decide whether I hide under the bed or under the covers. I choose the covers. Rule number 6 specified, she will come into your hut and she's about to do that now. I ran towards my bed and pulled the covers over my eyes. As I do so, I see the door of my hut swing open and I hear her loud, fast footsteps charging towards me. But I only see darkness now as I lay beneath the thick covers. I then start to hold my breath. I can feel her, just as the rule said I would. She's right above me and I feel her breath. It's very, very cold. My eyes are shut, but I know she's there. I'm trying to hold my breath as best as I can, but my heart is pounding out of my chest and my stomach is churning in fear. I have to refuse to breathe. Yet she waits, desperate for me to do so. What happens if I do take a breath? Will she kill me here and now? Will she possess me? My chest is starting to hurt and I can't hold it for much longer. And she can sense it. She knows I'm struggling. Her exasperated breaths are getting more and more excitable. I feel her hair dangling on either side of me from above the covers, wet. I can't do it, but I need to breathe. This is it. I know I'm gonna die. My mouth opens up for a breath and then she's gone. She just vanished. I hold on for 3 or 4 more seconds more, as long as I physically am able, before coughing and gasping for air. But she's gone. No more cold breath and no more presence. I was alone again. I peel back the covers and see that my hut's door is wide open, swinging in the wind. My main light is still on, as is my lamp once more. Did she use the flickering of the lamp as an attempt to try to get me to mess it up? To choose the wrong rule? If I had chosen to hide under the bed, would she have killed me? There are so many tricks to this, and I don't know which rules are which. It's been quite a few hours now and my main light is still on. So is my lamp. I feel slightly safer, but I think that's her game plan, to lure me into a false sense of security. I'm not letting my guard down, and I'm thankful that I didn't. I see a campfire, though, right by my tower. The glare of the light from the hut makes it harder to see, but I do see it. In fact, I see more than one now. There are now campfires all around my tower. I walk around the balcony's edge just so I can count, and I see 6 fires. By each fire, there are dark human figures with their backs turned toward me. What's going on here? They're all standing, one per fire, looking into it. The figures are of all different sizes. One looks like a child. I can't make out any specific features in the darkness, just their shapes. By the 6th fire, there is no figure. Why is there no figure there? Just as my eyes start to adjust to the darkness below, the figures begin to fall into their fires, one by one. The first to fall into its fire resembles a man. The figure is tall and skinny. He drops face first into the flames, almost willingly. As he squirms, the flames engulf him, making it impossible to make out any of his features. His screams pierce the thin air. As I stare in horror, another figure, a woman, then falls into her fire, and she screams as the flames cover her, writhing in it. But she does not attempt to escape it. Next is the smallest figure, the figure of a child, a boy. As he falls face down into the fire, I gasp. I can't bring myself to scream, but my whole body is in shock. The child is silent, but twitching violently as the fire burns him to ash. Fourth is the largest silhouette, a wide, sturdy shape of a large man. He falls into his fire, grunting in pain, holding back screams, but barely moves as he burns. Lastly, the shape of a woman. I turn to her before she falls. I need to see. I run inside and I grab my flashlight and I run back to where I stood before. As she falls into her fire, I shine it upon her, catching only a glimpse of her messy blonde hair and red checkered shirt, a rip along its sleeve, before the flames take over. There is just one fire burning left now, the 6th fire, the fire with no figure beside it. As the screams of those below me echo into the forest night, I hear the faint sound of a woman crying, somewhere in the trees below. Oscar, a voice calls out as the first rays of sun begin peeking through the trees. Oscar, are you up there? I run to the balcony, albeit cautious, and see Sam, Mark's daughter, standing below. She's in the same clothes as the last time I saw her. Sam, I yell. Sam, we need to get out of here now. Oscar, she shouts back. Oscar, I know. I know everything. I know about Allison, about her sister. I know about Harvey and his family, about Rick. I know everything, she shouts back. We need to get out of here, Sam, I yell. We can't, Oscar, she cries out. We have to burn her. We have to burn Allison's sister, she says. What? I scream. Why the fuck do we have to burn her? That's not my problem. We need to get out of here now, I yell back. No, that's the rule, Oscar. That's rule 10. She's going to follow you no matter where you go. If you leave this place, she'll be a step behind you forever, unless you burn her. That's rule number 10. You need to find her body and burn it, she said. Rule number 10 is burn her body or she will chase you forever, Sam told me. How are we supposed to find her body? We are out here in the middle of the woods, I shouted, defeated. I know where it is, Oscar. Sam smiles warmly in an attempt to calm me. Let me explain everything on the way. It's nearby, she said. It's morning now, and I survived the night. I survived all the other rules, too, and apparently I just need to survive one more. I grabbed my machete. It makes sense to me that the smiling lady follows you out of the woods. That's why Harvey couldn't leave, and that's why neither could Allison. That's why Allison said there's no getting out, because there isn't. Apparently, unless we burn her. And Sam? Allison said Mark didn't have a daughter, but was that just to throw me off? To turn me against a potential ally? Either way, I don't trust Sam either. Not by a long shot. Definitely not until I hear what she has to say. So I grab my machete. I edge down the steps approaching Sam, and she's looking at me. Her eyes then dart to the machete, but she seems like she understands my caution. So, why didn't you tell me all this before, I ask. If you know everything, why didn't you tell me when we first met? I said. I didn't know who to trust, Oscar, Sam explains. I did know Harvey, she said, but we didn't trust anybody, not fully at least, except each other, she said. And Harvey's dead now? I ask, solemn with my words. How did you know him? Yes, she looks down, he is. That was confirmed last night. I struck up a friendship with him when he worked here. I'd bring him extra food and take runs just to see him. That's why I'm in these woods now. I was looking for him, but after last night, it's clear. Yeah, he's dead, she said. Well, I don't know what you mean. How do you know it was confirmed last night? I ask. But she seems genuinely heartbroken. The lady, the smiling lady, she seems to focus on one victim at a time. While she's hunting someone, it seems like she ignores everyone else. That's why Allison kept feeding her new people, so that her sister wouldn't turn on her, Sam explains. My breathing is heavy, my heart racing. Then Sam carries on. Last night, I was out looking for Harvey as I've been doing so. I saw the fires around your tower and I saw those figures falling into them. They're all people she's taken. One of those figures resembled Harvey and some of the others, his family. I saw the sixth fire too, the one that she made for you, and I heard her crying to lure you out. She focuses on her prey one at a time, which confirms that you're the next target. She's already got Harvey, and she never gives up on her prey until she gets them, and it's you now, and you have to burn her to death, she said. Okay, but I killed Allison. Not her. I pushed Allison off her tower when she attacked me, so why did I see her fall into a fire last night? I'm shaking now. I had never said that aloud until now, but I did kill her. Yeah, I thought you might have, she said. The smiling lady wouldn't have attacked her while she was focused on you, but it doesn't mean that since Allison's death, the smiling lady hasn't taken her. She still could have eaten her. She's always hungry. It's all she cares about, Sam said. Okay, all right. I have to tell you, Sam, that I'm getting really frustrated right now. The secrets, the situation. Why didn't you guys just burn her fucking body? I shout. This is really messed up. I'm desperate for a way to get out of these woods and out of this nightmare, I thought to myself. It has to be you. It has to be the one she's hunting, Sam said. I've tried, but I've only found her body after Harvey disappeared. Whenever I try to burn it, the flames won't light. I don't understand it, but I know it has to be you. She lit a fire for you last night, and it has to be you who lights it, she said. How am I supposed to trust you? I asked, tears rolling down my cheeks. It made sense why she was looking for Harvey. She needed him to burn her body. But me? None of this makes sense now. Sam then pleads with me. I hid in a bunker last night. That's how I'm here so early. It was Harvey's bunker, Oscar. The smiling lady doesn't know about it. That's how he survived so long. I can show you where it is if you want to. I interrupted. I know where it is, I whisper. I have no choice. I suppose I have to trust her. And I have to burn the body, it appears. I quickly go upstairs and grab my backpack. In it, I put my lighter and a canister of kerosene. I'm going to follow Sam, but I'm not letting go of my machete. And of course, it's in a cave. On the way, Sam explained to me that after being pushed, Allison's sister had crawled here in an attempt to find shelter, but had succumbed to her injuries within the cave. She explained that's why I may have seen her crawling, because the smiling lady is replaying her final moments on a loop, which drives her hate. That also explains why she's always smiling. Allison said she was smiling when she pushed her. As Sam stands by the cave, creviced into the side of a steep hill, I shine my flashlight into its entrance. I don't see much. It's a thin tunnel-like structure, around 8 feet across, probably 15 feet tall. There isn't much room to maneuver should we run into any trouble. I can't see far enough into it either to see where it ends, but we enter the cave. She's near the end of the cave, Sam whispers. There's like a turn at the end, maybe 300 feet inward. We should feel safe. I've never seen her ghost in the days before. Sam then trails off. She leads the way. I'm keeping a close eye on her, but that becomes harder the further in we get. Soon, we are enveloped in total darkness. The light from our flashlights is all I can see as we leave the daylight behind us and enter the dark. Sound soon becomes non-existent. Our footsteps and shallow breathing are our only company. Almost as if out of nowhere, we meet a wall. To the left, a downward slope that takes us deeper into the cave's abyss. Why would she go so deep if she was wanting to be rescued? I asked Sam. She didn't, Sam hushed. She was at the entrance when she died. Someone moved her further in to protect her. I think it was Allison, she said, and then we start walking deeper. 10 minutes later, the cave begins expanding. Usually, spending this amount of time in a dark atmosphere means your eyes adjust. However, mine haven't yet. It's almost as if this is a type of darkness I've never experienced before. Or the smiling lady has put some weird effect on me. I don't know. I just know that other than the light from my flashlight, and Sam's in front of mine, I can't see shit. Then I hear a crackle behind me. A quick snapping crack. My heart jumps and I spin around to shine my flashlight where the sound originated. I only see legs. For a split second, crawling away from me into the darkness from which I came. The bare, dirty calves of what looked like a woman shooting out of sight. Oh my God, something's in here with us, and it's alive. The smiling lady is here. I turn to Sam, and Sam's gone. What the heck? I'm alone now. Sam's flashlight is lying on the ground. Where did she go? Where is she? Do I call out? Oh my God, I don't know what to do now. I'm gonna leave her flashlight. I need one hand to grip my machete and the other for my own flashlight. I can't go back now. The smiling lady is behind me. I need to find her body right away and I need to light it on fire. And I need to help Sam right now. I shine my flashlight around looking for Sam when I see a backpack leaning against the cave's wall. I carefully move towards it, knowing something is watching me from the darkness, my sweaty palms making the machete more difficult to grip. I'm squeezing it as hard as I can, and I get to the backpack, quickly scanning the cave around me with my flashlight, but I see nothing but rock. I turn my attention to the bag's contents now. It's already open, and it doesn't look like it's been there too long, maybe under a week. I hurriedly rummage through it. An old tarp, a lighter, and the same small canister of kerosene I had taken, the same type that was provided for me at my tower. Also in the bag was a knife, the same style of knife I had found in Allison's tower, only bigger. It had the same gold outline with silver and black design swimming through it, and on the knife it was engraved, "Your pair of knives, our pair of hearts, my Harvey," it said. Another one of Harvey's knives. This is Harvey's bag. I flicked the knife open to see it was recently used, its previously sharp edge now blunt, stained with the remnants of stone. I shined my flashlight onto the wall the bag leaned against. In writing, scratched into the rock face, it read, "Rule number 10, Sam lies." Crackling again behind me, I spin around and see Sam. She's smiling. "Sam," I start. Her eyes are locked on mine. She sees me through the darkness. Her arms start to break, almost as if being broken by the air around them, and they snap with jolting movements. Her elbows bend backwards as her bones jut out, hugging the skin under her forearms. With every crack, her smile grows wider. Soon, it is unnaturally widened and sprawled across her face, her eyes wide with glee. Her skin grows whiter, her hair longer, and she is now an unrecognizable Sam. I now know her as the smiling lady. I have fallen for it, just as Harvey had. She needs the darkness, that's why she roams at night. That's why I felt I was being watched as I left Allison's tower. I was, but she couldn't do anything to me because it wasn't dark out. She watched me as Sam during the day, but attacked me as the smiling lady during the night. That note in Allison's tower explaining what I looked like. Only Sam had seen me before then. I feel so stupid. I was safe from her in the daylight, but it's dark now. In this cave, and she's changing. This was all so simple. She died in the dark, and now she lives in the dark. I stand up, my machete shaking in my hand. I begin edging towards her, and I'm ready to strike. But in an explosion of movement on either side of me, I feel a grab. The creatures crawl at me as I feel their bony hands and arms dragging me down. I count five of them as I struggle against their grip. There's way too many, and they're too strong. My flashlight has fallen from my grip and now shines in my direction. I make out the faces of all of my attackers. Harvey, his wife, his child, the tall man Rick, and Allison. They hold me down, Allison's broken arms cutting me as I struggle, her shattered bones sharp. As they all pin me against the ground, they smile. I catch a glimpse of Sam as she lunges out of the darkness and bites into my chest, and my eyes go dark. A new man lives in my tower now. He has a family, a dog too, who visit him. We only leave the darkness when she tells us to. She doesn't want to lose us. I smile now, all the time, and when she tells me to burn, I burn too. Consider this your warning of the smiling lady in the woods. Do not try to find me. This will be the last time you ever hear from me. Do not ever come looking for me either. I belong to her now.